The preacher must preach with his whole body. Too many a preacher today uses only his head and lips to speak to his hearers' heads. A talking head, talking to many heads. And that is all. But as Lloyd-Jones observed, the whole man, his whole body, as well as his heart and soul, should be used in preaching. The whole personality of the preacher must be involved. I go so far as to suggest that even the body is involved. A preacher should preach with the whole of his body. Effective speaking involves action. The whole body. Lloyd-Jones remarked on the fact that John Henry Jowett was frightened of the large rostrum at Westminster Chapel. So much so, he asked for the railings to be draped with a curtain, so as to hide most of his body from the congregation. John A. Hutton, who succeeded Jowett, removed the curtain, so that the congregation could see his whole body. Lloyd-Jones explained, the drapery had been removed at his request because he believed that a preacher should preach with his whole body, his legs as with his head. Lloyd-Jones observed, he did not stand like a statue and just utter words through his lips. The entire person was engaged, gestures, activity, and so on. Lloyd-Jones pointed out that Demosthenes listed the three great essentials of oratory: action, action, and action. There is no doubt about this, said Lloyd-Jones. Effective speaking involves action. And that is why I stress that the whole personality must be involved in preaching. Whole body preaching. Whole personality preaching. Just so. But I want to concentrate on what is, to my mind, its leading aspect. And that is eye contact. We must preach with our eyes. Eye contact. How important this is. It speaks volumes. So much so, I hope I can drive it home. Few preachers actually look at their hearers. And with what loss? Spurgeon. Some brethren speak up to or through the ventilator, as if they sought the attention of the angels. And others look down upon their book, as if they were absorbed in thought or had themselves for an audience, and felt much honoured thereby. It is, I say, vital for a preacher to look at his hearers. Preachers surely know this, but many fail to do it. I am not, of course, asking preachers to stare fixedly at the people. But have you noticed that when you look at a face in an advert on a billboard, the eyes are really looking at you. They follow you wherever you go. Barrow boys, beggars and bank robbers, don't try to get you to part with your money by looking over your shoulder. Hearers must know that their preacher is looking for them and at them. Sadly, most preachers today have, subconsciously perhaps, developed a highly sophisticated technique of appearing to look at their hearers, but all the while skidding past them to focus on the wall or peer deep into space. While a preacher must not be boring, dull, he must be boring in the sense of penetrating. Of course, I know by experience how embarrassing it can be for a preacher to look into the eyes of his hearers, both for preacher and hearer. I admit it. I feel it. I know what it is to fail in this, to shy away. But lack of eye contact is catastrophic. It is the critical factor in producing that dreadful sense of detachment which is so prevalent among us. A preacher, detached from his congregation. What a contradiction in terms. He should be wrestling with them, wrestling with each hearer's mind, heart, will, and conscience. And the most powerful physical weapon he has in his armory is his eyes. A preacher who glances past his hearers, or sneaks a quick, shy look at them now and then, but jerks his eyes away as soon as the hearer focuses back upon him, ruins what he should be trying to do. Ruins it, I say. Spurgeon. The face, and especially the eyes, will play a very important part in all appropriate action. It is very unfortunate, to say the least, when ministers cannot look at the people. It is singular to hear them pleading. If I may make a comment, it is rare, if ever, that I ever hear any preacher pleading. It is singular to hear them pleading with persons whom they do not see. You wonder where the sinners are. The preacher's eyes are turned upon his book, or up to the ceiling, or into empty space. When Dr. Whalen was ill, he wrote, "Whether I am to recover my former health, I know not. If, however, I should be permitted to preach again, I will certainly do what is in my power to learn to preach directly to men, looking them in their faces, and not looking at the paper on the desk." Azahel Nettleton has much to teach us in this regard. The glancing of his piercing eye and an indefinable something in his whole manner was something remarked upon. His eye was the master power in his delivery. Full and clear and sharp, his glances in the most animated parts of his discourse were quick and penetrating, beyond almost anything I recollect ever to have witnessed. He seemed to look every hearer in the face, or rather, to look into his soul, almost at one in the same moment. You felt that you were in the hands of a master, and you never stopped to inquire whether he was a good or bad pulpit orator. Whatever his critics might say, in one thing you could not be mistaken, he arrested your attention and made you feel, for the time at least, that religion was the one thing needful. Nettleton looked into the soul. This is the way to preach. What is more, please note how this observer commented on Nettleton's whole manner, and that obviously included more than his eyes. All were utter strangers whom I addressed, Nettleton recorded, of one particular time when he was preaching. My only method of designation was by pointing and saying, "I mean you, and you, or this sinner, and that sinner." Never did I feel a deeper compassion for sinners than for these poor strangers. A number, I know not how many, were awakened this day. In about 1755-56, Tidence Lane went to hear Shubal Stearns preach. He recorded his experience. "Upon my arrival I saw a venerable old man sitting under a peach tree with a book in his hand, and the people gathering about him. He fixed his eyes upon me immediately, which made me feel in such a manner as I had never felt before. I turned to quit the place, but could not proceed far. I walked about, sometimes catching his eyes as I walked. My uneasiness increased and became intolerable. I could no more get away from him than a bird can shun the rattlesnake when it fixes its eyes upon it." Body language, eye contact, have voices all of their own, and powerful voices at that. I repeat the earlier illustration of the barrow boy, the beggar, and the bank robber. Can you imagine any of them not looking at you, not watching you like a hawk? Wouldn't they throw their whole personality into trying to get you to do what they want, adjusting their approach according to your reactions? They want your money, and they mean to get it. Doesn't the preacher want your soul for Christ? Well then, the preacher, if he wants to gain his end, must use the whole of his body when he preaches. Eyes, hands, arms, and legs, all must be called into action. And of course, not only does the preacher need to look at his congregation, he must want his congregation to look at him. Spurgeon wanted even a blind man to look at him. We want all eyes fixed upon us and all ears open to us. To me, it's an annoyance if even a blind man does not look at me with his face. If I see anybody turning round, whispering, nodding, or looking at his watch, I judge I am not up to the mark, and must by some means win these minds. Very seldom have I to complain, but when I do, my general plan is to complain of myself, and own that I have no right to attention, unless I know how to command it. As for the hearer looking at his watch, what if he starts tapping it, then shaking it? And that takes us to the next chapter.